Hi, I'm Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matters. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. The AMA is a global leader in professional development and education, improving the immediate performance and long-term growth of individuals and organizations. Check us out on our website, www.amanet.org. All too often, when a problem employee gets punished by their manager or HR staff, the result is that instead of just having a problem employee, we have a problem employee who's been punished. Is there a better way? In his book, Discipline Without Punishment, published by Emmacom Books, Dick Grote helps managers and HR professionals adopt a positive, proven method for getting problem employees back on track. Dick is chairman and CEO of Grote Consulting Corporation and the author of The Complete Guide to Performance Appraisal, The Performance Appraisal Question and Answer Book, and Forced Ranking, Making Performance Management Work. His articles have appeared in Harvard Business Review, The Wall Street Journal, and many other publications. The name of the book is Discipline Without Punishment.
Right.
Well, that's a rather loaded title.
Yeah, well, it's three negative words in a row. You know, discipline's negative, without is negative, and punishment is negative. But what I'm talking about here is the need to, instead of focusing on punishing people for their misdeeds at work or failure to perform, instead focusing on personal responsibility. And for almost 70 or 80 years, almost every organization in America has had some process for handling disciplinary problems, whether that's a person who doesn't come to work regularly or breaks one of the organization's rules or has a shabby attitude or any of the other myriad host of disciplinary problems. Organizations typically have had a process for handling discipline problems. And these discipline procedures, typically called progressive discipline, at their root have one thing in common, no matter what the process is, and that is the reliance on punishment. If an employee misbehaves and doesn't come to work every day on time and doesn't treat customers right, the response of supervisors and managers tends to be one of punishment. Find the punishment that fits the crime. And so there are warnings and reprimands and placing people on probation and giving them time off without pay. What all of these have in common, and it's a mistake, is the reliance on punishment to bring about a change in behavior. My point of view, which is absolutely reinforced from thousands of companies that have adopted the system I developed, is we have to maintain punishment, but we don't have to use, we have to maintain discipline, excuse me, but we don't have to use punishment. We can put the responsibility with the individual.
There's a story you tell in the book about an obscene message on a potato chip that led you to develop the discipline without punishment approach. Can you tell me about that?
I sure can. And how does a nice person like me get involved in such an unpleasant process as discipline? It all goes back 30 years or so when I was working for Frito-Lay as their manager of training and development. And at Frito-Lay at that time had 39 plants around the country. And in one of our plants, we had a problem. This one plant, with a total employment of 210 people, in the first 9 months of 1973, had fired 58 out of 210 for disciplinary reasons. And management's reaction was no big deal. As long as they're getting the potato chips out the back door, if they have to run off a bunch of turkeys, what difference does it make? Well, we found out what a difference it made when we started to get a lot of customer complaints at Frito-Lay's corporate headquarters. Every day we got stacks of letters, all of them describing the same bizarre problem. The customer had gone to the store, bought a bag of chips, pulled one out, and there on the chip was written a two-word love letter. I'll let you figure out exactly what the words were. But they all came from this one crazy plant where there were so many people being terminated. I got into that plant. I was sent in there to shape those knuckleheads up. And when I got in there, what I found was the most poisonous atmosphere I have ever encountered. What was going on there was that they were using the traditional progressive discipline system. Anytime any minor issue would come up, and they were using warnings and suspensions and reprimands and terminations so much that the employees were so angry about the way they were being treated that they were looking for any way they could to strike back at management. And we never found out who he was. But what we figured was that one day, one guy came to work with a felt tip pen because he had figured out if you've got a felt tip pen, you can pick a potato chip up off the conveyor belt, write a message on it with a felt tip pen, and put it back. And he must have told all of his friends because we were getting a lot of this. That's what really caused me to realize that the way we were dealing with people, using punishment, warnings, reprimands, suspensions without pay, was not solving discipline problems, it was creating them. And that's how I happened to develop the discipline without punishment process.
I guess that's probably the best way to look at this whole thing is to take a systematic approach to this type of challenge. What are the goals of a discipline system?
Well, that's a good question, because in most organizations that have the traditional progressive discipline system, they only have one goal for the system, and that is solve the problem. And the fact is that if you punish a person often enough and severely enough, you can get a person to stop doing something. That's true. I am not going to argue that punishment doesn't work. But my belief is that we want more than just solve the problem. I think another goal that's almost equally important, in addition to solving the problem, is enhancing the relationship between the supervisor and the employee. I think there's another goal. And a third goal, I would argue, in addition to solve the problem and enhance the relationship, is to build personal responsibility on the employee's part so that the employee is doing the job that he's getting paid for out of choice and not because the supervisor is playing policeman. And then the last goal I would have for a discipline system is that no matter what we do, we know that today almost any disciplinary action can be challenged. And so the fourth goal I would have, besides solve the problem, enhance the relationship, build personal responsibility, the fourth one is assure compelling defensibility.
It sounds like the most noticeable difference is that is the decision-making leave?
Yes. And let me tell you about the decision-making leave. And let's compare it with what organizations traditionally do. In the traditional progressive discipline system, it's typically an oral warning, followed by a written warning, followed by some kind of final warning, and frequently what's used is a 3-day disciplinary suspension without pay. And then if the problem still continues, the employee is terminated. In discipline without punishment, we're still going to use a progressive and increasingly more serious series of steps. But when you get to the final step before termination, here is where the dramatic change comes in. At the final step before termination, when you've reached the end of the line to this individual, and you've got to get the message across, if this problem isn't solved, you will be terminated. We need some dramatic gesture to bring that message home. But we don't need to use punishment even at this point. And in discipline without punishment, the final step is a decision-making leave. What's a decision-making leave? It's a disciplinary suspension, but a disciplinary suspension with a twist. For one thing, it's for one day and one day only. For another, the employee is paid for that day, and he's paid as a demonstration of the company's good faith desire to see him change and take responsibility and get back to doing the job that he was hired for originally. So if you were a fly on the wall listening to a supervisor have a decision-making lead conversation with an employee who had a series of problems, you'd hear the supervisor say something like, "Pat, we've talked about this problem at least twice before. You agreed you would change and get back to doing the job right, but Pat, that hasn't happened. You need to make a final decision about whether you can do this job and do it right or not. To do that, you are not coming to work tomorrow. I am suspending you. It's the final step of our discipline system. But Pat, when you are out tomorrow, I want you to use that time in your best interest and in ours. I want you to spend tomorrow thinking through, is this the right job for you? Can you solve the problem? Are you willing to make a commitment to fully acceptable performance? And I want you to come back the day after tomorrow and let me know what your decision is, either to change and stay with us or to quit and find something that's right for you somewhere else. Now, to indicate that we're serious about hoping you really do decide to change and stay with us, because we've got an investment in you, you'll get full pay for the day. We're not going to take away your pay. We're not going to treat you like some little kid. We're not going to hurt your family's grocery budget. You'll get full pay for the day. But you also need to know, Pat, if you come back the day after tomorrow and tell me that you've decided to change and stay with us, as I hope you do, and another problem comes up, you will be terminated. So I need you to leave now, spend tomorrow at home on us, make your decision about what you want for your career and come back the day after tomorrow and you tell me what your decision is."
What you've talked about so far, and especially that final step there, the decision-making leave, is very humanistic. You know, it's very it's not as cut and dried as a lot of employee handbooks make out the escalation process. You know, when most of those, I imagine, are formulated by, you know, HR
and lawyers,
right? And I was about to say, and the legal staff.
Yes.
Where do you come down? And I'm not looking for you to come in anti-lawyer or anything like that. I'm kind of curious here. Your approach. Do you find that historically it has fit into the need on the corporate side for a codified type of procedure?
That's a very good question, and the answer has been proven again and again and again over 30 years, and that is that discipline without punishment is far more defensible than the traditional progressive discipline system. And here's why. When someone ultimately does get terminated, one of the first things when the termination is challenged, whether it's EEOC or wrongful discharge suit or any of the other third parties that an unhappy employee can take his complaint about being fired to, the first thing that hearing officer, arbitrator, EEO examiner is going to ask is, was the employee aware of the seriousness of the situation? Did he really realize that his job was at risk? And suspending the person for any period of time as a disciplinary measure certainly answers that question. If they suspended you, you should have known this was serious. But now, what the company can do is demonstrate that we gave this person a day at our expense to think about whether he could do and was willing to do what we're paying him to do. And he came back and he made a commitment and he didn't live up to his own word. The fact is that the legal defensibility with this is so much higher.
It's time for You've Been Spotted, where we interview random people who are attending a workshop or seminar at one of our 5 executive conference centers. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. And now here's Kevin Lee.
Today at the AMA Center in New York, I met the director of a vacation resort who traveled all the way from Aspen, Colorado, to attend AMA's seminar, Coaching, a Strategic Tool for Effective Leadership. And she shared with me an interesting recent experience when she had to confront and discipline a problem employee.
I'm in the hospitality and tourism industry. The common disciplinary issues that come into my office run the gamut. It's everything from employees who show up late, to employees whose performance is just falling apart, or an employee who stopped showing up for work altogether. Recently, we dealt with an issue where an employee who'd performed solidly for the company for about 2.5 years, she'd really been a stellar performer, was starting to show up late, was sleeping through her alarm clock and missing shifts and not showing up for work. And her manager called me and said, this girl's been a really great employee all this time. What do I do? I don't want to, we've got to do something, but she's really just fallen apart. So we went through the process and warned her and then wrote her up. And then it didn't happen for a week and a half or so. And then we wrote her up again. And then ultimately it came time to have the termination conversation. And turns out she's got a whole lot of personal issues. She's 17 years old, and so that's one of the other challenges is the age and maturity level of our workforce. But that's when the standard disciplinary process can really not work for an employee, because now what we have to do, not what we have to do, what we're willing to do is take a step back and figure out if there are steps that we can take to help accommodate the fact that her young personal life is falling apart. And as an employer, really support her while still maintaining a level of professionalism and running our operation consistently. Because that's the other key when you're going through the disciplinary process with anybody, is making sure that you're treating everyone consistently. So we're flexing a little bit, and it's going to work out okay in her operation. She's going to take some time off, and then when she does come back, it's going to be a matter of there are no more second chances. When an employee's behavior really impacts an operation, and again, I work in the tourism industry, so if somebody doesn't show up for a shift, there are guests who are not being served. It's harder to be negotiable when the impact is so substantial. And then also just the impact on the morale of the rest of the team. But at the end of the day, life happens to everybody. And so as long as we're operating consistently, it's nice to be able to take things on a case-by-case basis and do what's best for the employee and the operation at the same time.
Remember, we'd really like your feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.